Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Lorenzo Pasquini and Chris Myers. How are you guys?
Great, well. Thank you.
Excellent. We're in Chateau Palmer. We've been tasting a few of your lovely wines, and we've just had the 2004, which I think was my favorite, so it's quite nice. I've tried 2004, 2008 Alter Ego, 2008 Chateau Palmer, and the 2013's Alter Ego Palmer. So it's a good range of wines. It was actually interesting. We spoke last week about sort of the older styles of Chateau Palmer, and 2004 is the first wine that's just starting to take on some of those savory characters. It's got a sort of high leather note in there, which is quite interesting, which certainly probably didn't almost certainly have when it was first bottled. Would that be right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice short answer to the point. Let me just give a 10-minute introduction. Yeah, that's right, mate.
You're right.
What I want to talk about today is a wee bit about some of the R&D that you guys did, because you're in charge of R&D at Chateau Palmer. And we had a look around the vineyards, and I suppose the first thing is when you've got an area where you do a bit of research, research and development, and you said that you have interns come in and make small batches of experimental wines.
Yeah.
Chateau Palmer is not a cheap bowl of wine. Mm-hmm. A small batch is still going to cost thousands of pounds worth of grapes, if not tens of thousands of pounds. That's pretty good for an intern to have a crack at it.
Yeah, no, every intern that we have here has a trial to do based on the wine or on the grapes. And of course, there's a risk, because when you try things, you can make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But there's
that's the idea, isn't it? Almost
exactly.
To make a mistake sometimes.
Exactly. And making mistakes, you learn things. So that's a risk that we have to take if we want to move forward and achieve our goal, which is make the best wine as possible and respect as much as possible our grapes.
Okay, so what sort of experimentation did you do last season? You know, is there some examples you can give me?
Many, but let's say, as I said, the goal is to make the best wine as possible. So now we are focusing a lot on decreasing of SO2 amounts, the management of oxygen, and extraction. And last year we focused on presses, this extraction-wise. This year we will focus on pumping overs, let's say, the amount of pumping overs during fermentation.
Okay, so let's talk about pressing then, because you know what the results were. What were you looking for when you're pressing? Are you looking at how hard you press, how often you press?
To select the different presses. What we did before is to we bring the barrel just in front of the press, and we fill the barrel with the wine who comes from the press directly without using any pump. And usually we just put wine in the barrels. And once we fill the barrels, we move to another one. So we kind of mixed all the different pressures. And the barrel was our tool to separate the different pressures.
Pressure or pressure?
The different steps of pressure.
Okay.
Of the press.
Yeah. I can understand. So you'd press a little bit, fill up a barrel.
Exactly.
And then squeeze a bit more out, get more phenolics out of it.
And then once the barrel is full, we use another barrel, and we pass to another barrel. What we try to do is to understand which pressures were interesting for us to cut. And so we don't select the wines based on the barrel, but based on the pressure. So we know that there are steps of pressure that are interesting for one part of the wine, press wine that comes out, and other steps that are interesting for another type of press wine.
Okay, so what's the difference in the wines?
The free run, the first wine that comes out of the press, it's kind of lighter, more elegant and less tannic, but a little less concentrated as well. The heart, what's in the middle, is a little more concentrated, and our goal is to have as much wine as possible in this middle part, and the highest part is more astringent. So that could be the risky part to use in the blend, because that could give too much tannins. So our goal is to select these three parts as precisely as possible.
Yep. And do you keep some of the sort of the tails, if you want to use a sort of a spirits analogy, the last bit that you've pressed, do you keep that and then use it as a blending component, or do you just...
We separate everything, and at the end of Malolactic, we taste every barrel of pressed wine, and then we decide how to blend them. We blend the presses in 4 or 5 qualities step, A, B, C, D, and then we use this A, B, C, D in the blend.
Do you use it? You don't use everything, I presume.
No.
What do you use the wines that don't? You know, can I buy myself a sort of a second grade Chateau Palmer, or do you sell it on, or what do you do with the wines that you're not using?
It depends. Sometimes we drink it, and sometimes it's sold as a bulk wine. More often we drink it.
No,
I'm joking.
No, that's fair enough. I do that. I won't tell you some of the terrible things I do about wine. But okay, so pressing was a big thing last year, playing mm-hmm. with different press levels, mm-hmm. different pressures, and obviously different levels of extraction. Mm-hmm. And we were in your barrel room. And we saw a lot of funny-looking white things sticking out of your barrels. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
We are trying to follow the evolution of the angel share.
Angel share, that's the evaporation of wine in the barrels.
Exactly. And what we try to do is to, first thing, understand the evolution, which is not the same during the year. Because there are part of the year where you lose a little more wine than other parts of the year, depending on the weather. Mm-hmm. And second thing, we try to understand in our two barrel rooms where we lose more or less wine, so where we have more or less angel share. And the main goal in the future will be to understand the effect of the angel share, of the centimeters of angel share on the wine. Mm-hmm. So what we are trying to do now is to, as I said, follow the evolution, and also with another experiment, measure the amount of oxygen on the angel share.
So as the wine evaporates, you're getting a cavity forming inside the barrel.
Exactly, yeah.
And that cavity could be filling up with oxygen.
Oxygen or something else, or mm-hmm. other gases.
Yeah.
And what you would think directly is the empty space is full of oxygen, but what we measure is that is not completely true. Maybe there are other gases, and it could be maybe interesting to play on this, let's say, empty space to give more or less oxygen to the wine.
Yeah. So it's not necessarily a bad thing to have oxygen
not
in
at
contact
all.
With the wine, because it does make the wine a bit more stable sometimes longer term.
What we are trying to do is just trying to understand the impact of, in this case, the angel share. We're not trying to protect as much as possible the wine from the oxygen, because as you said, the oxygen is very important for the wine to get stabilized and to grow up as we want. We just want to know how things go on to then adapt to our wines. Every vintage is different, so we want to exactly know how to adapt things to the wine to achieve the goal that we are looking for.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting about that was it wasn't so much that you were running experiments, you're almost doing a control at the moment. You're just trying to understand what's going on in your winery.
Yeah.
It's something I don't really think about. I've never had anybody talk to me about the angel share in wines. How much evaporation does come off a barrel?
Oh, that's a good question. It depends. It depends on many things. It depends on the humidity of the barrel room. Mm-hmm. It depends on the, probably, but I'm not sure about it, on the age of the wood. And it depends on the weather. So I would say between 5% and 10%, but I mean, I'm not quite sure about.
That's over 2 years.
Yeah, over 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's still quite a lot of evaporation, isn't it?
It is a lot, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's...
You know, that's why we try to keep the barrel room humid.
Yeah, no, because that'll decrease the evaporation. Speaking of barrels, though, one of the things I'm quite hot on at the moment is barrels, or trying to understand barrels anyway. Bordeaux, quite serious about barrels. You know, they taught Rioja how to do barrels. And I always get quite impressed with Bordeaux wines because they've all had a fair old whack of oak exposure usually when they're being made. But when you taste a lot of Bordeaux, you don't get that vanilla-y flavor or anything. The oak seems to be more integrated into the wine than maybe some other regions. Do you want to just talk a wee bit about what you're trying to achieve with oak barrels and maybe how you do barrel selections?
First of all, we try to work a lot with the coopers. So we don't really do a barrel selection. We select our coopers, which are, our partner. And so that's how we work on the barrel. We don't select the barrel. And second, what we look for on during aging in barrel is to get the wine stabilized. What we try to avoid is to have a wood comes up the wine who cover the typicity and the aromas of the wine. What we try to avoid is all those vanilla and coconut and wood aromas. Of course, the wood has to give complexity to the wine, but you have to smell the wine, of course, the grapes, if you can. So the wood is just a tool to help the wine to age and to grow up. You don't have to smell the wood. If you smell the wood, it's not what we're looking for.
Yeah, but you do get an oakiness in Bordeaux wines. It's not vanilla. It's not cloves. It's not, well, it might be a wee bit of spiciness, but it's not typically those sort of classic oak aromas, those toastiness. Uh-huh. But they're, you know that when you taste the Bordeaux wine, you can't. For me, anyway, I'm sure better tasters can. I can't necessarily unpack
it. I would say it's like pepper when you cook. If you put a little amount of pepper in your plate, and that will help the other aromas to come up, and you will smell the pepper and the plate, and it will give a great complexity. If you put too much pepper, then you would smell just the pepper, and you wouldn't smell the plate. That's the same thing.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that you're doing some experiments around sulfur dioxide. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to, most people seem these days to be trying to decrease sulfur dioxide levels in their wines. Is that what you're trying to do?
No, we're trying to make the best wine as possible. Once again.
So that's actually a good answer though, isn't it? Because some people do get a bit funny about it. If you look at the natural wine movement, they're obsessed with it. And all they're trying to do is make the worst wine possible by reducing the level of sulfur dioxide.
Exactly. No, we're trying to make we have two goals, as I said. Respect the place, the history of the place. Respect the 1928 that I tasted. And make the best wine as possible. Respecting the place, trying to make the best wine as possible. So we are trying to see if decreasing the SO2, we can have more expression of the wine, more expression of the fruit, or just understand more about the wine, learn more about the wine, because SO2 is a stabilizer of the wine. So if you take out a stabilizer, the wine is less stable. So you have to pay much more attention. And so you will understand much more things about the wine itself. So this is a great R&D topic because, as I said, we're asking ourselves the good question, I guess, I think.
Okay, and how are you trying to decrease SO2 or manage SO2?
During fermentation, we try to control the population of yeast.
Yeah, because yeast is naturally produces SO2 during fermentation.
Oh, yeah, a small amount, very small amount. But yeah, and what we try to do is to microbiologically control the wine during fermentation and then to protect it for this experiment, from oxygen during aging. So that's also why we're doing other experiments on the oxygen. This is another reason. And so that's where we are so far.
Sulfur dioxide, there's two parts to sulfur dioxide, isn't there? They call it bound versus free sulfur
yeah,
dioxide.
What does it mean?
Yeah, yeah.
When you put sulfur dioxide in the wine, there is a part of it who bounds with the compounds of the wine, and another part, which is what we call the free SO2, which is the actual antioxidant part of SO2. We are trying to do is to have as much as possible of SO2, for the same amount of total SO2, as much as possible free SO2 and as less possible bound SO2, which is more or less unuseful.
Yeah.
So what we try to do to have as less as possible of bound in compounds, We try during fermentation, we try to have good fermentation, so not stacked fermentation, and to control the yeast that we have. Make sure that the good yeast are doing the fermentation. And then to have the malolactic, which is well done and which is done quickly, because the malolactic is one of the malolactic fermentation is one of the moments where you can have microbiological problems. So this is the very important point, the second fermentation.
And you said earlier when we were doing the tour that the risk with malolactic fermentation, you're converting the malo acid to lactic acid, is that the bacteria that does it doesn't like sulfur dioxide, so you can't have too much sulfur dioxide in the wine. But during normal alcoholic fermentation, lots of carbon dioxide is being produced, so the wine's not oxidizing either.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
and yeast are much bigger, 10 times bigger than bacteria. So yeast are easier for us. They work much easier than bacteria. So sometimes you often also actually have slow FML, slow malolactic fermentation, and that's what we are trying to avoid, to have good malolactic fermentation in order to have, as I said, less bounding compounds, if it's clear.
Yeah, no, I follow that. All right, then. I think we'll let you guys probably go home now. I think it's probably dinner time. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you for the lovely wines to try and
thank
the
you,
tour.
Chris.
And
thank
you. It was brilliant.
Thank you.